Translation: It was he only who loosened the hair of all the wives of the miscreants, who dared open the cluster of your queen's hair, which had been nicely dressed and sanctified for the great Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. At that time she fell down at the feet of Lord Krishna with tears in her eyes. Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. Queen Draupadi had a beautiful bunch of hair which was sanctified in the ceremonial function of Rajasuya Yajna. But when she was lost in a bet, Dushasan touched her glorified hair to insult her. Draupadi then fell down at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna decided that all the wives of Dushasan and company should have their hair loosened as a result of the battle of Kurukshetra. Thus, after the battle of Kurukshetra, after all the sons and grandsons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, all the wives of the family were obliged to loosen their hair as widows. In other words, all the wives of the Kuru family became widows because of Dushasan's insulting a great devotee of the Lord. The Lord can tolerate insults upon himself by any miscreant, because the father tolerates even insults from the son. But he never tolerates insults upon his devotees. By insulting a great soul, one has to forego all the results of pious acts and benedictions also. Patnyas tava dhimaka klipta mahabhisheka shlagishta charu kabaram kitavei sabhayam sprishtam vikirya padayo patitashru mukhya yastad striyo krita hatesha vimukta keshaha. It was he only who loosened the hair of all the wives of the miscreants, who dared open the cluster of your queen's hair, which had been nicely dressed and sanctified for the great Rajasuya sacrificial ceremony. At that time she fell down at the feet of Lord Krishna with tears in her eyes. So, Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for allowing me to try to render some service today. I'd like to obviously seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled, and for those who are also listening online. And it's quite a deep verse. All these verses are quite deep. And obviously it's a bit difficult because a lot of the topics that are covered here in terms of like insulting devotees and Vaishnava Parad, Srinivas Prabhu, His Grace Srinivas Prabhu actually covered a lot of it, which I would have probably wanted to talk about on Tuesday's class. I apologize, I wasn't there for yesterday's class. I had another service to do in the morning at that time, so maybe even Dal Baladev Prabhu may have covered a few extra points. But one shall try their best by the Lord's grace. So we can see here, it's continuing with the conversation that Arjuna's having with his older brother, Yudhishthira Maharaj. The realization has dawned upon them. They're getting in the process of taking stock of what's going on. They realize that Krishna has unmanifested these pastimes. And Arjuna is basically just reflecting and recollecting all the ways in which Krishna has helped them, over the years. Whether it's empowering Arjuna, empowering the Pandavas, helping them, guiding them, instructing them what is the right thing to do in all situations. And here, even to the point where showing how Krishna is there always for them, and even to the point where he will take revenge for any wrongdoings that have been done to the Pandavas. And specifically in this verse, we can see that one of the biggest wrongdoings was the attempt. We always say Draupadi is disrobing. Actually, she didn't get disrobed. It was an attempted disrobing on her, right? And obviously, one cannot think of a greater insult than this. And so Arjuna's recollecting how Krishna himself took upon himself to avenge the insult that had happened to Draupadi. So we're going to look at the whole aspect of Vaishnava Parada, just adding on to the points that Srinivas Prabhu conveyed the other day. But it's amazing, actually, if you look at the Mahabharata in the commentaries as well, that scene where Draupadi is trying, where Dushasan is trying to disrobe Draupadi is probably one of the most intense scenes in the Mahabharata. And for those of you who know Mahabharata, realize it's probably one of the most powerful scenes. And we know that at that time, Draupadi, she put her hands up and, just screamed out, Hey Govinda, Hey Govinda, because he realized she has no other options left now. She tried to actually defend herself against Dushasan. And the Mahabharata said that what could she do against the lion-like arms of Dushasan, who had the strength of so many elephants? And in those days, the Kshatriyas are trained to fight at optimal strength and for a long period. They were trained not to get tired. And still, Dushasan was like pulling. And Draupadi, she realized she had no chance. So she hung on to the sari, her own sari, and she let out one arm, shouting. And then at the same time, she realized, even this is not helping. So she just let go fully and just started, Hey Govinda. And at that point, she actually uttered a really beautiful prayer. She said, O Krishna, O Govinda, O reliever of the distressed, beloved of the gopis, Lord of Vrindavan, O creator of the universe, soul of the world, please save me, who am sinking in an ocean of distress. O Janardhan, you, the reliever of the world's distress, please save me. So like this, she actually screamed this out in the courtroom when this whole, you know, ordeal was going on. And actually, it shows the glory of a powerful devotee like Draupadi, that her prayers are so powerful and glorious that actually it actually made the world see Krishna's manifestation. So for those of you who don't know, then what happened is Krishna, who was at the time in Dwarka playing chess with his wife, he detected that, okay, my devotee needs me. So he subtly manifested in the courtroom where Draupadi was trying to get, attempted to getting disrobed. And he, subtly appeared. And from his hand, he was providing cloth of sari to cover Draupadi's body whilst Dushasan's trying to uncover the cloth. And so basically, the more Dushasan's trying to pull the sari, the more the cloth was coming, more and more. And like I said, those Kshatriyas were trained to fight hard for a long period of time. So Dushasan would have had a lot of energy in him. And still, after all of it, he just fell down in a heap. He couldn't manage all that sari. So it says that in the Mahabharata, it says that this shows that a chaste lady like Draupadi, a wonderful devotee, they cannot be disrobed, they cannot be exposed, because Dharma will protect them. Dharma will protect them as well. And afterwards, Krishna then promised Draupadi, afterwards when they're in the forest, and Krishna met them, and Krishna actually said to Draupadi that you are the wife of kings. The earth may shatter, the sun may get cold, the oceans may dry, but my promise will never fail. Please be patient and stick with virtue. So I guess for us as well, we can learn that even when we're going through ordeals and things, and let's say if we do find ourselves, we're in a position of getting insulted and it hurts us. But, the tendency for us to try and take revenge, and sometimes when a person does something bad to us, then we want to sink to that level and do something bad to them, isn't it? Like, that's generally in the material world. But here Krishna is saying, just be patient and stick with virtue, right? I will take care of everything. Actually reminds me as well that, in the Bible as well, I'm sure Saras can, corroborate this. There's a quote by the Lord where he's saying that, do not try to, take revenge. Revenge will be mine. I will take care of that kind of reaction. I'll take care of the reactions. You just basically do your duty. Okay. So I thought that's a really nice way in which Krishna actually has stepped in. And as the purport says, he promised that all these women of the Kuru dynasty, they'll all become widows because of you. And just like you, as a vow, have unloosened your hair, because Draupadi promised that because Dushasan actually untangled her hair and pulled her along, pulled her along by the hair, Draupadi said that until my honor is restored, I'm going to keep my hair undone. Right? Kshatriya lady says, they have a lot of very kind of strong sense of honor. And so Krishna actually promised that just like you, all the women of the Kuru dynasty will have their hair loosened in due course of time. And as Prabhupada says here, they did. All of them became widows, basically. All the Kuru dynasty. Okay? Millions and millions of people. Okay, so here, one of the things that Prabhupada is saying here, that Vaishnava Parad, the Krishna can tolerate even insults to himself, but he cannot tolerate insults to his devotees. And so we have to understand why this Vaishnava association is so precious. It's our saving grace, actually. And even Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Shadu Shanga, Shadu Shanga, Sharva Shastri Kai, Lomattar Shadu Shanga, Sharva Shidi Hai. The verdict of all revealed scriptures is that even by a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all success. And it said actually that when one commits Vaishnava Aparad, so Aparad means offense. So one commits offenses to the Vaishnavas, it actually prevents us from performing our bhakti purely. And actually blocks us from accessing the holy names properly. Because sometimes people may say that, I've been chanting for years and years and years. Why is it that, I can't seem to access the nectar that is talked about in the scriptures? It's because the anarthas that you've built up, they're actually what is blocking us from actually accessing the holy name. Okay? So, there are obviously different types of anarthas. And according to the Madhura Kadambini, they can be divided into four types. You've got Bhakti-otha, Sukrit-otha, Duskrit-otha, and Aparad-otha. Right? So Bhakti-otha is the anarthas, the unwanted things in the heart, the build-up in your bhakti practice, like getting attached to, you know, your talents, your skills that you may pick up along the way, you know, getting too much caught up in the status and the pride and, you know, all those kind of things. The perks that you get along your bhakti, your position, status, facilities, everything like that. Sukritotha is the offenses you build up from previously performed pious activities. Okay, sometimes your piety can also be an hindrance in performing bhakti effectively, because your piety can stop you from doing things fully, because you're kind of like want to keep yourself prim and proper or something, right? And then you've got Duskrit-otha, which is kind of obvious. These are the anarthas building up from previously performed sinful activities. And of course, you've got Aparad-otha. These are the anarthas built up from causing offenses. So I want to ask you a question. Of the four otas, which one do you think is the most potent, the most serious ota? Yes, Gudruma Prabhu? Yes, very good, Prabhuji. Yes, thank you. Aparad ota is the most severe, group of offences. And do we know, within Aparad ota, and Srinivas Prabhu did actually touch on this in the other class, within aparad otha, what are the types of aparad? There are many types of aparad, but it's kind of generally three categories of aparad that one can cause. Do we know what they may be? Sorry, Vaishnava aparad and? Seva aparad. Yeah, so this offenses in the seva. Nama aparad, yes. There's another one actually, which is offenses to the paraphernalia. Oh, dharma. Did you say dharma aparad? Okay, dharma, yeah. So like this, there are various aparads, offenses to the dharma, offenses to the Lord's paraphernalia, offenses in when you're conducting your service, and of course, offenses to the Vaishnavas. Gudrumupu, did you want to add anything onto that? Oh, yes. That's another category as well. Offenses in the mind, verbal and physical. We're very lucky, actually, in Kali Yuga, right, that thankfully, well, I speak for myself here, thankfully, the offenses in the mind in Kali Yuga are not taken into consideration, just what you say and what you do. Of course, we should still be careful, because you know how it is, that what we generally think of in the mind, if we're not careful, will translate into the tongue and eventually into our physical actions as well. So we have to be very careful, even with the mental offenses as well. You know, think good thoughts, yes. So yes, and out of all these offenses, the ones to the Vaishnavas are the most severe. Which is why every morning we recite the 10 offenses, don't we? And of the 10 offenses, which is the one, well, it's pretty obvious now since we're talking about it, which is the one that is the most severe then, of the 10 offenses? Yes, number one, to blaspheme the devotees of dedicated lives for propagating the holy names of the Lord. Right? That is the most severe. In fact, often what happens is generally when a sadhaka comes in and they're practicing, generally, not always, but generally, the first offense they're prone to committing is the last one. Right? Because, you know, we don't always have complete faith in the process just yet. And then through that, you tend to go backwards. That leads to the ninth offense, which leads to the eighth offense, and like that, until you finally come to the stage where you're doing the first offense, which is the worst one. Yeah? So one actually leads on to another one. Right? So we have to be very careful of that one as well. Okay, so yes, aparad otha is the most severe. In fact, it's the stickiest anartha we have. Again, if we refer back to the Madhura Kadambini, this is a wonderful book. In fact, I think Sutapa Prabhu is going to be writing a commentary on the Madhura Kadambini very soon, based on the course that he has been doing, which I'm sure he'll be doing very soon for School of Bhakti. But with the Madhura Kadambini, actually it delineates the types of anarthas and at what stage in our bhakti process they get destroyed. And the thing is, your anarthas don't get destroyed in one swipe. There's increments. So like, it's almost like, and Vishnu Chakri Thakur has even given numbers like to them. Like, for example, You might get some of your anarthas partially destroyed at this stage of your bhakti path, and that is called partially destroyed, like 15%. Then they may get pervasively destroyed, right? Which is like 75% of the anartha's effects gone. Then they may get almost completely destroyed, which is like 95% or something. And then completely destroyed, which is 100%. So with the aparad otha, right? This category of otas, right? They, actually, this is amazing, right? They get pervasively destroyed at nishta. This means that you have to go through doing all your bhajan and obviously making a lot of great progress through a lot of your anarthas coming out of your heart, and you're getting to the stage where you are steady in your devotion, which is called nishta, right? Now, just be very clear here. To be on nishta means you're extremely advanced. Okay, it's not that, oh, you know, I've been practicing for 3 weeks now, I've got my morning program down, I'm on nishta. No, no, no. Nishta takes years. Like, you know, someone on nishta level for our vantage point is like super advanced. Okay? I think actually I would say for most of us, we won't be able to tell much difference between a person nishta and a person bhava or prema or ruchi or whatever, because for us, they're all like super advanced. Right? Obviously, once you get to that level, then you have more subtleties to see the differences. But that's the point, right? So your aparad otha, only 15% will actually get cleared, only when you actually reach nishta. So you can imagine how serious this is, right? Then they get almost completely destroyed, which is like 95% gone at bhava, right? This is, you know what I mean? Like you're really right at the like top level of your immersion in Krishna consciousness, right? And then only will 95% gone. And then only when you reach prema bhakti, right, prema bhakti, right, which is like, you know, the apex of what we're, you know, going for, will it be 100% destroyed? But here's the thing, right? In the scriptures, they say that even at 100% destruction, it's not even fully gone yet. There's still a slight tinge of that potential remaining, and it says that only until you attain the lotus feet of the Lord himself. So within prema, there's even levels of prema. And when you get to like an intermediate level of prema, then the aparad otha will fully go. Like, that's it, okay? So that's what I said. It's the stickiest anartha. It will stick with you right till the end. Obviously, rest assured that generally when a person comes to nishta, they're on good ground though. They're generally on safe ground. And, you know, they can carry on nicely. But still, we can't be fully complacent. That little bit of anartha, the aparad otha, may still be lurking. So yes, there's a prayer by Narottam Das Thakur. He says, "My dear Lord, if someone commits an offense to you by chanting the holy name, he's forgiven. But if someone offends your devotee, there is no salvation." Okay, and Srinivas Prabhu gave a cutting statement the other day. He said that if one offends a Vaishnav, they are destined to go through 84,000 hells. 84,000 hells experiences. So, anyway. So, yes, obviously, like we said, it prevents us from performing bhakti purely. And one thing that we also find, this is something we can see practically in our experience in Krishna consciousness, when you commit Vaishnava Parad, the worst thing that actually, well, I'll ask you, what is the worst thing that happens if you to commit Vaishnava Parad? Is it going to the hellish regions? Or there's something maybe more worse than that? Yes. Exactly. You lose the association of the Vaishnav. That's actually worse than any kind of physical punishment you go through. Right? That's the worst. In fact, I believe it was Rupa Goswami or one of the Goswamis said that that's worse than any kind of hellish experience. Losing the association of the Vaishnavs. And here's the thing. When you commit aparad and it contaminates your mind, what will happen is Krishna will orchestrate a situation for you to be taken out of the Vaishnav Sangha. But here's the real like clincher here. When you come out of the association of Vaishnav Sangha, in many cases, you yourself are not conscious of why you've left the association. Like Krishna will provide you extraneous reasons for wanting to leave. Oh, you know what, I had to attend to this. Oh, I had to deal with this issue outside. They did this and all that kind of stuff, right? Like you've done an offense. Because you know they say, right, Krishna will give you a forgetfulness as well, right? Mata Smriti Ganam Apavanam Cha, right? He will give you the forgetfulness to delude you into thinking that you've left of your own accord, which is the worst actually, because you're not even aware of why you've left. So it's almost like, you know, like you're done an offense and then, you know, like Krishna sends like a thing and then, you know, like grabs you in invisible hand and, you know, and then takes you out. And you yourself have no idea why you actually left that sangha. But Krishna will give you some material reason to make you think that you left because of this reason. Does that make sense? Right? That's probably the worst thing actually that could happen. Right? So yes, we have to be very careful of this. We still got time. That's okay. So I want to say a quick pastime. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Sri Sri Gornitai ki. Jai. I want to say a quick pastime here. It's related to a personality in the Gaur Leela called Ramachandra Khan. I'm sure some of you have heard of him. Ramachandra Khan was the landowner in a district within Bengal. Unfortunately, he was very proud, despite his first name, Ramchandra. he was very proud, and he was very inimical to the Vaishnavs, very envious of them. In fact, it said he was atheistic. And so he did a lot of shenanigans, I must say. That there's actually two main pastimes related to him. One is actually related to Haridas Thakur. Actually, yeah, they're both actually aparadhas. So I can actually say both of them, but I was actually going to look at the other one that he did with Lord Nityananda. But okay, so with Haridas Thakur, he tried to defame Haridas Thakur. I'm sure some of you know this pastime. He sent a prostitute, right, to ruin his reputation, right? We know the story here. Does anyone know what happened when the prostitute went to Haridas Thakur? What is that? Yes, absolutely. So the prostitute actually said that, do not frame me just yet. Do not frame me in the act. Let me just see Haridas Thakur. Let me attain union with him. And then the next day, then you can come and catch us. And obviously, each time the prostitute went, Haridas Thakur said, I would happily oblige you and fulfill your desire, but let me just finish my rounds. And obviously, he just kept chanting his rounds. And this prostitute was just sitting there waiting all night long. And then Haridas Thakur comes down and said, I'm really sorry. Come back tomorrow and we'll do it. I'm sorry about this, okay? I'm really sorry. I'll make sure I'll finish my deadline tomorrow. Right? So then, prostitute comes again. And then again, Haridas Thakur says, okay, yeah, we'll do it today. I definitely promise. But let me just chant my rounds. Let me finish my rounds. Kind of feels like, you know, when you like got stuff to do and you're like trying to hold off a devotee authority to tell them, Prabhuji, don't worry, I'll get it done. I'm getting to you. Right. Anyway, so then Haridas Thakur, he's chanting. And then again, he comes down and says, I'm very sorry. And then what happens now? What's happening is a prostitute, she's actually starting to chant as well, along with, Haridas Thakur, when he's doing his Tulsi prayers, or when he's doing his prayers to the Lord, she's also chanting like, you know, Hari and, you know, all these kind of devotional, mantras. And then, of course, as Ian Prabhu said, eventually he came down, finished his rounds, and at that point, she just basically just gave obeisances and apologized and says, look, I was sent here by Ramachandra Khan to defame you. But in your association, I've realized what is the true purpose of life. I've committed so many sins in my lifetime, but now I just want to surrender to you and take shelter. Please, please help me become, you know, the best person, you know. And so Haridas Thakur even said that I knew you were sent to me. I knew this was a frame. But I knew that, you know, through association of the holy name, anyone can get purified. And eventually she became a great Vaishnav. She actually shaved up all her hair, actually. Because, you know, for a woman especially, you know, the hair is a great sign of beauty, right? She shaved her hair, just, you know, donned simple clothes, worshipped Tulsi Maharani, just chanted all day long, became a wonderful Vaishnava after that. So now what's happening is that, but through this, you'd think that someone like Ramachandra Khan would probably like just realize that, hang on a minute, you know what, I should really not mess around with this person. He's obviously favored by God, right? But his heart was still hard. His ego, his pride was so much that he still couldn't let it go. He still was inimical to the Vaishnavas. So he didn't bother Haridas Thakur anymore. But then what happened around shortly after that, Lord Nityananda was going around doing pilgrimage around the towns and villages of Bengal at that time, right? Spreading the holy names. And he came to Ramachandra Khan's house. And in those days, you know, especially in rich landowners' house, they'd have like a mandap. It's like a Durga mandap. I guess he was a demigod worshipper, right? You know, to Durga Devi, right? He had a Durga mandap. And Lord Nityananda came to the house. And obviously, he is a great, great personality, right? So you'd think that in the culture of the time, they would welcome him and, you know, welcome the Vaishnava and serve them. So Lord Nityananda took place around the Durga Mandap. And this Ramachandra Khan came out and says that, I'm sorry, but you can't sit there because there's not enough space there for you and your followers. But there is a shed that you can maybe accommodate yourself in, you know, outside the house, down the road. Like, you know, being very derisive, derogatory. And Lord Nityananda obviously was furious. He came out of the house laughing loudly, laughing out of like anger, not like a good laugh, but an angry laugh. And said that, fair enough, no problem. You know what, you're right. I'm not worthy to be sitting in this Durga Mandap in Ramchandra Khan's house. I will go now. This place is only fit for cow eaters and for cow killers. And then what happened, so this Ramchandra Khan, he was also a bit unscrupulous. Even though he was a landowner of the district, he was also cheating, fiddling with the income tax, you know, to give to the Mughal government, the Nawab Hussain Shah's men. Right, so he was actually holding back funds. And at that time, as soon as he offended Lord Nityananda, the Mughal governors, they found out that this Ramchandra has been holding back on taxes. Immediately, one of the Muslim chief men came with his soldiers, ransacked the house, violated the inhabitants of the house, and actually sat on that same Durga Mandap, which Ramachandra Khan refused Lord Nityananda to be sitting on, and there slaughtered cow and ate it for like, I think was it like days in a row. Like just using that Durga Mandap to actually slaughter cows and eat it. And that whole village actually got destroyed after that. So this is a severe reaction. And we can see from this that if one commits Vaishnaparad, it doesn't just affect you, it will affect potentially your family, your village, all these kind of things. Okay? So this kind of shows the severity of the Vaishnaparad. Now, one of the questions that can be asked here is that, okay, Ramachandra Khan verbally insulted Lord Nityananda, and yes, he tried to frame Haridas Thakur to defame his reputation. And obviously, he got a severe reaction for it. Severe, right? Violated, abused, ransacked, destroyed, right? But then you look at people like Jagai and Madai, right? Now, we know from their exploits that they did lots of worse things, right? They were, we tend to think of them as just, you know, especially from when we watch dramas and stuff in ISKCON, right? You know, okay, they're drunks and they're very loud-mouthed and stuff, but they were very serious criminals as well. They were killers, they were rapists, they were arsonists. They did all sorts of stuff, like really serious crimes. But for their crimes, what was their result? They basically, ended up getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda. So how do we understand this? That it seems externally, potentially, right, that Ramachandra Khan's crimes, as bad as they were, seem to be less intense than Jagan Mada's crimes. But Jagan Mada's reaction was very much positive, whereas Ramachandra Khan's ones were very negative. Any thoughts on that? Any thoughts on that? Yes, I will go for Dada Shakti Mataji and then, yeah, Saras Prabhu.
Because they did not offend any Vaishnavas.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Did you want to? Yeah.
So he intervened, and I think at that point, the good fortune came about. Just my opinion.
Yes, sir.
Intervened at that point, even though they committed an offense, but he intervened and showed them his mercy. But the other fellow didn't get any mercy from Nityananda. He went away angry and cursed him, actually. But Lord Nityananda didn't curse them either. He gave them his blessing by stopping the Lord Chaitanya from killing.
Yeah, I'll go to Jay Krishna Prabhu and Ian Prabhu, but just to repeat, so Radha Shakti Mataji mentioned that obviously they didn't directly insult the Vaishnavas, they just were committing crimes in general. Saras Prabhu said that Lord Nityananda actually gave them blessings and showed them mercy, whereas Ramachandra Khan directly obviously went against Lord Nityananda. Jay Krishna Prabhu?
Ramachandra, he wasn't repentant the mistake he did to Haridas or to Lonikina, whereas Jagat Madai, they realize their mistake, and then because they realize the mistake, they ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. And
to get the same realization. So it could be going through the same experience or doing the same activities, but the reactions of our experiences for us to learn would be on different severities.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so one thing, and I think all of you have actually covered the points that, you know, could be actually said on this difference between them. And so one thing it says, there are two terms here. Aparad, and this is basically Radha Shakti Mataji also pointed out, that there's aparad and there's paap. Paap means sin, sinful reactions, right? Bad activities, immoral activities, but on a very generic level, like just doing bad stuff in general, right? Like, you know, just a guy out there just doing bad stuff. Whereas aparad is where you're specifically harming the devotees, trying to harm Krishna, right? So it's a very much more personalized type of bad action. So between them, aparad carries a much more severe reaction than paap. Obviously, as Vaishnavas, we're in an interesting situation because once you come into Vaishnav culture, then, you know, in one sense, whatever bad action you do, we have to be careful because it will probably be aparad, because if you're doing like a bad action, once you come into Vaishnav culture, following the Vaishnav process, then most likely it's going to be going against the Vaishnavas, right? Whereas obviously, when you're a kami guy outside of Vaishnav culture, then, you know, you're not really like being personalized in or malicious towards the Vaishnav specifically. You're just doing general bad stuff. So therefore, paap can be mitigated, which is why in amongst the othas, duskrit otha, which is the previously performed impious activities, are the first set of anarthas to actually go in the bhakti path. It gets easily, taken out. And whereas aparad, on the other hand, is the one that stays the longest. So there's a big difference between paap. With paap, you're basically, another way of looking at it is you're working separately from Krishna, whereas aparad is you're working against Krishna. You're going against Krishna. So there's a subtle difference there, right? If that makes sense. Yeah. So like this, we have to be careful of all these kind of like different things. And main thing is, keep ourselves tolerant. Try and please the devotees. And even when we have devotees that, let's say they do snap at us, right? Often it's because maybe some condition comes through, but we have to be tolerant enough to not get affected by that and let our pride come through, okay? I was actually going to look at how to now, what are the root causes of how to, pull out the kind of like mood of causing aparad, but I'm conscious of the time right now, so maybe I can hand it over to questions, comments, queries, or anything like that. Oh, yes, Jai Krishna Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhuji. That was a very nice class. I was just wondering, like, Bhishma is known as, like, Amharjan, and he's a Vaishnava in his own right. So when Draupadi was insulted, they normally say when a devotee is insulted, either you defend that devotee or you walk away. Yet we saw Bhishma do none of that. I wonder if you could explain.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yes, sir. Thank you. That's a very tough question as well. some of the other senior Vaishnavas can maybe help out in this regard. But from my understanding, number one, obviously it's a lila, and Krishna's trying to teach us that no matter how great you are, no matter how powerful you are, the only person you can ever rely on to help you, to save you from any situation, is actually Krishna himself. Even senior devotees like Bhishma Dev and Kripacharya and whoever else was present there, in intense times, at some point we have to be prepared that everyone at some point can let us down. Everyone can some point can let us down. They were also bewildered at that time. Krishna also taught through Bhishma Dev how, there's dharma, but also dharma needs to be applied in the right way in certain situations. And at that time, Krishna actually said that you could have employed apadharma, which is that you could have spoken out, because Bhishma Dev was so caught up in the dharmic regulations of the scriptures that he wasn't even sure what to do in that. He basically got himself tangled with the dharmic regulations of what to do in the situation, because Draupadi even asked Bhishma Dev, you know, grandsire, what are you doing? Why don't you speak up? Tell me what to do. And Bhishma Dev was actually differing. He was like, well, according to dharma, I'm trying to see whether you actually can be wagered or not, and whether you're the property of Yudhishthira right now, or whether you're a free lady, because Yudhishthira himself has just put himself in slavery. I'm not sure what's going on here. He got too much in dharma, whereas Krishna himself later said that if I was there, I would have slaughtered every single person in that courtroom, right? Which obviously on a mature level would have transgressed so many dharmas, right? But on an upper dharma level, emergency dharma, it's for the higher principle. So that's one thing. There's also a pastime where it's said that because Bhishmadeva is associating with these demonic personalities for so long, right? You know, it may have weakened him a little bit in that association. And also he was eating the same food that the Kauravas were eating as well, right? And also some of the food that he was eating, there's a pastime where Shakuni actually sent one of his demonic associates to actually enter into the food, right? Which then the people in the courtroom then ate, which then also contaminated the consciousness, so they couldn't speak out for what is right. Which is why at the end of the Mahabharata, when Bhishma is on the bed of arrows, and you know when Draupadi actually came to Bhishma, they said, how can you speak all these words of wisdom now to Yudhishthira at the end of the war? Right, you know, the Bhishma Parva, when Bhishma Dev actually gives Yudhishthira knowledge about how to run a kingdom. And Bhishma Dev said to Draupadi, my daughter, the reason I can speak now is because the blood has seeped out my body, that contaminated blood, which basically made me stay silent when you were in your hour of need. And now that blood is gone, so now my conscience is cleared up, so now I can speak properly. So there's these certain angles there, which is why Bhishma Dev actually, you know, was constricted the way he was. Yeah. Munina Prabhu?
Hi, Krishna. Thank you for the class. I just wanted to ask a question in regards to, so like you gave the example of Jaga and Madhai, and my understanding was that they did make an offense, like when they hit Lord Nityananda, and so that's why the reaction happened. So it just made me think a little bit wider, like when we go out on Sankirtan and we try to like reach out to these people who are not devotees, and let's say they like hit us or they do something offensive to us there, is that on their side considered aparad? Because they're not doing it with the consciousness that this is a devotee, they're just doing it with the consciousness that whatever this guy's telling me is rubbish or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, this is a very good question. So obviously there is like It's a grey area, because on one hand you could say it's pap, because the person's motivation is that they're not trying to do anything against the Vaishnavas specifically. Mm-hmm. They're just being ignorant, right? At the same time, it could be seen as a pap, but a very more serious pap than a normal pap, because it's still the Vaishnav. Mm-hmm. So let's say a guy was to throw something at a normal, like a person who's not a Vaishnav on the street, he'll get a reaction for it. If he was to throw a thing at a Vaishnav on the street, not knowing that he's a Vaishnav, right, he will get a reaction. It may be more than what he did to the normal person, but maybe not as much as someone who specifically threw it at that person consciously knowing that he's a Vaishnav. Doesn't make sense? It's in between. But the point is that just avoid all these activities. Yeah.
Question, thank you. The other question I wanted to just ask was, you know, because we've talked about like offenses and how, you know, we need to like kind of tread carefully.
If I just may add on to that one point, is that the more knowledge you have, the more severe the reactions is if you do something bad as well. That's another thing to consider. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So knowing that, you know, this apparat has very, very adverse effects, how do we tread carefully while still being ourselves and kind of taken to the process naturally, because it can feel that you need to be cautious of every little thing that you're doing, and with the fear that you make an offense because you don't know how people will take you as a person, etc. So what's the cutoff line?
I mean, one of the ways in which you can strengthen yourself to not commit aparad is actually first is develop a great philosophical understanding. Right, develop a relationship with Shastra, because the more you imbibe the knowledge of the Shastra, that will start to influence your behavior. Subconsciously. There's only so much you can consciously try to mind your P's and Q's. Right? But if you actually develop a relationship with Shastra, the Shastra will, you know, subliminally start to condition your mind in the right way. And then your automatic behavior will change. So it says that if you have a good philosophical understanding, it does three things. Number one, It strengthens your intelligence. Number two, it stabilizes the mind. And number three, it will sustain the heart. You know, and through that, you'll also obviously have greater respect and appreciation for association of devotees and be sensitive to their needs. You know? So yeah, like that. Yes, one last question, and then I think the Lord's mercy is beckoning in the form of prasadam.
You know, at nishtha, that stage, bhav, or even prem, I probably won't go to prem because what's the likelihood of committing Vaishnava aparad in those, at those stages? So you have nishtha, then bhav?
No.
I guess at prem, it won't happen at all.
It's nishtha first. Yes. Then after nishtha, it's ruchi,
ruchi, yeah,
which is developing a higher taste. Mm-hmm. Then asakti, which is developing even higher, what it's called attachment.
Yeah.
Then bhava prema.
So from bhav to prem, sorry, so from nishtha to prem, what's the likelihood of committing an offense?
Very low. Very, very low. In fact, they say in the scripture that when you get to nishtha, you're on very, very safe ground. You're in very safe. For us as sadhakas, the tricky part is anartha nivritti, right? This is where a lot of the kind of like purification is happening. It's a very rocky road. It's almost like you're in the plane, and the plane is still suffering turbulence, it's still going up and down and things like that. Once you get to nishtha, it's very steady now. It's going steady. But still, there might be tiny little bit of issues to just beware of. It's not 100%, but it's almost gone. So it says that from nishtha to prema, it's a quite a smooth exponential journey. But anartha nivritti is the tricky patch. And that for a lot of sadhakas, depending on where they're at in the devotional life, that tends to be quite a long period in a devotee's journey. From nishtha onwards to prema, the thing accelerates quite quickly. Yeah. Yeah.
The tendency is perhaps to burn it off rather than to create.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if, you know, exactly. You're basically burning off the anarthas now. Yeah, but that burning off process, for some of those anarthas, the burning, the final burning will take a little bit more time. But it's, you know, it's still burning though, but you know, yeah.
Thanks, Papu.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Yeah.